This is Roughly Speaking Newsroom Edition, the flagship podcast of the Baltimore Sun, featuring stories from our city and our state that you can't get anywhere else. I'm Pamela Wood. Thank you for joining us. Baltimore, like many other cities, is anchored by its professional sports teams. And not too long ago, Baltimore Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco was perhaps the face of the franchise, especially after the retirement of linebacker Ray Lewis after the 2012 Super Bowl win.
In a trade from the Houston Texans, with the 18th pick in the 2008 NFL Draft, the Baltimore Ravens select Joe Flacco, quarterback, Delaware.
Play action, Flacco, naked boot to the right, he's gonna tuck and run. Are you kidding me? 30-yard line, still on his feet, 20, 10, 5, touchdown, Ravens! Joe Flacco! And they love him in Baltimore!
But that all changed last fall when an injured Flacco gave way to a younger, faster protege, a 20-year-old rookie named Lamar Jackson.
On first down, Jackson throwing end zone, or close to it, and into the end zone goes Hayden Hurst for the touchdown.
And they go with Jackson, even though things are going well on this drive. Jackson will throw it. It's complete to Crabtree.
Kind of an unusual formation that time, but a heck of a throw.
Jackson had the speed, the agility, and the faith of his teammates to go on and win 6 out of the final 7 regular season games, falling short of a wild card win. It wasn't all rainbows and sunshine, though. Throughout the season, he struggled with his accuracy, often fumbling the ball or throwing passes that didn't reach their targets.
Pressure on. The ball comes out! The ball comes out, and it's recovered by the Chargers. It was taken out of his hands. And that will end it.
That's a fumble. That ball's out. And it only catches up with you when it catches up with you. And the fumbling issues this season finally got the Ravens.
But Jackson's season was historic in many ways. He led all quarterbacks in rushing yards and had 5 rushing touchdowns. But as Baltimore Sun sports columnist Mike Preston pointed out recently, despite the Ravens' additions to round out Jackson's offense in the NFL draft this offseason, his accuracy is still in question, and that could have season-defining consequences before the season even begins. With us now is Baltimore Sun Ravens beat reporter Jonas Schaefer to help us put this big gamble on Lamar Jackson in perspective. Jonas, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jonas, what are the Ravens doing to ensure that Lamar Jackson improves for this upcoming season? And can he prove his skeptics wrong?
Well, you mentioned, I think, right at the top, it really all comes down to his accuracy. There's not a whole lot that they can do right now with him to work on his accuracy. It's pretty much in his hands. He's down in Florida working with a quarterback's coach. But when he comes back for the preseason, they're going to be working on all the things that maybe they kind of gave short shrift to last season when he was really working on learning the playbook and learning what it meant to be an NFL quarterback. He really does have to be a more accurate quarterback, but you look around the league, rookie quarterbacks are never as good as they are 5-10 years later if they can last that long. So it really just comes down to whether he can hit open receivers. Obviously, there's a question about whether the Ravens have the receivers who can get open, and that's going to be something I think we'll talk about later. But he needs to be able to, you know, give the respect to the passing offense that it needs, because otherwise the success that they'll have on the ground game is really not going to be there.
Given that he was thrust into this role in the middle of the season last year as the starter, now that he's got more time and knowing he's the number one, is that an indication that he should be better and more accurate now that he's got the lay of the land better?
Right, yeah. I mean, one thing that the Ravens coaches always talked about was they were really impressed by his processing and his ability to read defenses. And what he said a couple weeks ago was that when he missed more often than not last year, it was because of his fundamentals, just because he wasn't doing something right with his feet or his base. So, you know, the hope in Baltimore with the Ravens organization is that if he cleans those up, he can really be a top-level cornerback. You combine his rushing ability with a pretty naturally talented arm. If he can get those fundamentals down and the wide receivers and the tight ends can give him some targets to throw to, the hope is that he can really maybe become like a Joe Flacco-level passer, which, isn't great, but it's definitely good enough.
Sure. And now we saw a similar trajectory for a young quarterback with Robert Griffin III, you know, someone who, had an amazing rookie season, a lot of rushing, and now he's the backup to Lamar Jackson.
Right.
How is that going to work, and is RG3 a good option if Lamar Jackson doesn't work out this year?
Well, it's funny you mentioned it because I grew up a Redskins fan, and so, you know, seeing him kind of rise and fall as quickly as he did, and then having him end up in Baltimore where they're kind of trying a similar experiment is really interesting. The only kind of caveat that I would say is that when Robert Griffin III was coming into the league, he had a history of knee injuries. And obviously, the more you have, the more at risk you become. Lamar Jackson's pretty healthy. He got banged up a few times last year, but nothing that really affected his best skill, which is his leg. So, you know, you talk to the Ravens coaches, they say that they're not as concerned about him being an open field runner because, in a sense, you have more control about who's throwing their body at your legs than if you're in the pocket where, you know, a guy can just kind of blindside you and collapse those knees and boom, your season's over. So I think, you know, like pretty much all 32 NFL teams, their hopes are deeply invested in Lamar Jackson. RG3 came on last year, did a fine job in a series, but I think, you know, like with any quarterback, if the starter goes down, you're really asking a lot for the backup to be anywhere close to as good as him.
I know one of the things you mentioned about Lamar Jackson is his running ability, and there's some who say that his talents could maybe be better used, as a running back or wide receiver, some other position than quarterback.
Right.
Would that ever be something, or are we all in on him as the quarterback?
I think, you know, from the time that Lamar Jackson came out for the draft last year, he basically scoffed at the notion that he would play anything but quarterback. It's all he's played his life. Obviously, you know, he's the guy who kind of bragged about being the fastest guy on his college team, the guy who could run the 4-yard dash in under 4.4 seconds, which is just extraordinary. And obviously, speed like that would translate pretty much anywhere on the field aside from in the trenches. So, you know, when the Ravens were kind of toying around with that idea of a two-quarterback situation last year with Joe Flacco under center and then Lamar Jackson doing stuff with reverses and passes.
Jackson will run. Buck Allen a block. Here comes the Heisman Trophy winner out of Louisville. That's why they got him, or one of the reasons why. Down to the two, hit by
Flacco is a receiver. Collins, the running back. Lamar Jackson has a Ravens touchdown.
You kind of got a sense of like, oh, you know, maybe there are some fun ways that they can use him, but I think they are fully committed to him being a quarterback. And the question now is the new guy, Trace McSorley, the sixth round pick that they got at Penn State, whether he becomes, you know, kind of this gadget player that that some people, you know, maybe think Lamar Jackson should be.
And now, in the offseason since last year, we've seen a lot of Ravens depart, a lot of fan favorites, Terrell Suggs, Eric Weddle, C.J. Mosley, but at the same time, new folks are coming on board. Tell me a little bit about some of the draft picks, in particular these wide receivers that the Ravens picked up.
We'll start, I guess, with Hollywood, Marquise Brown.
It's a great name.
It is a great name. And I guess we should clarify for the record, it is not because of, you know, the bright lights of California and L.A. or anything. He is from a place in Florida called Hollywood, not far from where Lamar Jackson grew up, actually. And he didn't do a lot of stuff before in the pre-draft process. He was injured toward the end of his junior season at Oklahoma, which kind of limited what he could do. He didn't run the 40-yard dash, but he's a guy who, through that pre-draft process, said that he thought he could break the NFL record for the fastest 40-yard dash time at the combine. He's, you know, a smaller guy, 5'9", about 165, 170 pounds. I'm not sure where the Ravens want him to be physically, but, I mean, he's a guy who you put on the field, he's going to be probably the quickest guy, if it's not Lamar Jackson.
We're thrilled to have Marquise. He's a dynamic guy. He keeps everybody up at night. That's the vision we have for him. The other team, he's going to keep us up at night, too, because of his versatility. We were able to talk with him when he visited about just being in a lot of different roles for us. And he's got the kind of skill set, you know, we can play him inside, outside, short, deep, all kinds of things. And we're really only limited by our imagination.
They need a guy who can, as they say, take the top off of defense, a guy who can really stretch the defense and those safeties and make it so that A defense just can't all gang up on Lamar Jackson and try to stifle that running game. Another guy they took in the third round, Miles Boykin, probably a little bit more of a bigger but equally physically impressive guy from Notre Dame. Didn't have the numbers that Marquise Brown did, but he also didn't really have the quarterback play that that Marquise Brown did, because Hollywood Brown was playing with the Heisman Trophy winner at Oklahoma. Notre Dame had a little bit more of an iffy quarterback situation, but he's a guy who also came out early, really helped his stock with just tremendous physical testing. A really impressive guy, and the few times we've got to talk to him, and it should just be a nice compliment. You have the small, speedy guy maybe doing some more short stuff, and then the bigger, taller guy, more of a possession receiver.
I know with Marquise Brown, he is injured. He's coming off of a foot injury. Right. What do the Ravens expect in terms of his health for, you know, training camps and then season?
They had the rookie mini camp a couple days ago. He was not an active participant in that. He was just taking it all in, doing mental reps, as he said. But the hope is that he will be ready for the start of training camp, which is, you know, end of July, early August. And they feel that that should be enough to really get him acclimated for the season.
I know with the Ravens, these top two draft picks being wide receivers, what does that tell us about the offensive strategy? Are the Ravens expected to move more to a passing game than a run game? Or what are they kind of planning with these two guys?
We don't know a whole lot about exactly what the offense will look like. Obviously, it's to their advantage to kind of keep things under wraps. But they have said all season that this is going to be just a top-to-down reinvention of the offense. I think you're going to see a lot of what made the offense successful last year with Lamar Jackson doing these running plays, you know, having the threat of giving it to the running back. You're going to see a lot of tight ends. But I think with the investments in those draft picks, you definitely want to see a more accomplished passing game. I mean, I think anyone who's followed the Ravens knows that there hasn't been a great track record of receiving talent that's come through. You've just had maybe one, maybe two good guys. And with Hollywood Brown and Miles Boykin, there's really a possibility for a great foundation for, you know, 5-10 years in Baltimore. And with that, you know, I think the Ravens will probably lead the NFL in rushing attempts next season. I mean, they pretty much ran the ball like 60% of the time when Lamar Jackson took over, which is just an extraordinarily high rate. But I think it'll be probably closer to 50% this year, which, you know, again, is going to be pretty close to the bottom of the league in terms of ratio. But I think they definitely want to be more balanced, not only for the sake of the offense, but for Lamar Jackson's health.
And now, who are some of the other notable players that the Ravens have picked up, either through the draft or through free agency? Who else should be watching for?
I think probably the big name of free agency was Earl Thomas. Obviously, Eric Weddle, much beloved here in Baltimore for the seasons that he was here. But they looked at him, they looked at his age, they looked at who they could possibly get in free agency, and, you know, they just decided to cut him. He had another year on his deal. They figured that they could improve in other ways. There was a great class of safeties in this free agency crop, and they ended up with Earl Thomas. He's a guy who comes a little bit with the red flags because he had some injury problems toward the end of his career in Seattle, but he was I think a 5-time All-Pro selection in Seattle, just known as a ball hawk. One of the things the Ravens didn't do all that great on defense last year, which is kind of funny to say because they were just dominant otherwise, was they didn't create a lot of turnovers. And he's a guy who's known for having extraordinary range, extraordinary instincts, and just, you know, being known as a guy who can flip a game just with an interception and maybe taking it all the way back. And he's a guy who gives them the kind of flexibility that they really like having in the back end there.
Well, and that's the kind of thing Ravens fans love to see,
yeah,
certainly.
Ed Reed.
Now, this is the first offseason where the Ravens have had Eric DaCosta as a general manager after years and years of Ozzie Newsome. What are some of the differences that DaCosta has brought in his approach?
Well, I think it's a little early to say exactly just what their kind of philosophical difference is. I think it takes a couple of years for that to really crystallize, but I think it's really situational dependent because obviously for as long as Ozzie Newsome was here, he had Joe Flacco for a lot of years, so he was trying to build an offense around him, and now it's Lamar Jackson. And really the theme that emerged from this draft was speed. You know, we talked about Hollywood Brown being a real burner, Miles Boykin also fast, the running back that they drafted was the fastest running back in the draft, the quarterback that they took, Trace McSorley, was the fastest quarterback. So I think in that sense, there was some consistency there. Otherwise, you know, they've talked more so about embracing analytics, you know, using the data that's available to them to get a hand up and to make more informed decisions, whereas Ozzie Newsome was maybe more of an old school, trust your gut kind of guy. So, you know, I think Eric DaCosta is not exactly young, but I think he is more kind of a new age general manager than Ozzie Newsome. And I think, you know, the hope is that that will be to the Ravens' advantage.
And so when fans go back to M&T Bank Stadium and they start watching, overall, how is this team going to be different? What can they expect to see differently this year than last year?
You know, it's interesting because just thinking about the big term, big picture, I think it's fair to say that they probably took a step back during the offseason just with the players that they lost, losing guys like Terrell Suggs, Za'Darius Smith, C.J. Mosley, who we haven't mentioned, the terrific linebacker. But, you know, just I was doing a positional review last night, and they really did make upgrades at some crucial positions. I mean, if you think Lamar Jackson takes a step forward, that's huge for any team having a improved quarterback play. Wide receiver is going to be probably if not an improvement. Running back, they added Mark Ingram, who's a really great running back from New Orleans. I think the defense will probably take a little step back. But again, you know, they have a lot of great young talent that they're really counting on to take them. And it's going to be an interesting season in the AFC North because you have Cleveland, who's ascendant with all the talent that they have there. Pittsburgh is always a thorn in the Ravens' side. And, you know, they're always fighting for a playoff spot just like they were last year. Ravens knocked them out of the playoffs in that final minute of the game against Cleveland. So, I mean, it's going to be really interesting. A lot of power rankings have the Ravens right in the middle of the NFL, but they have the rest of the teams in the AFC North right in the middle of the NFL. So it's going to be probably a three-team race with the Ravens, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh. And, you know, just one injury or one game could swing the direction of who wins that title.
I know, looking back to last year, it was kind of up and down for Ravens fans. And when they made that switch and made that push towards the playoffs, it really rejuvenated a lot of the enthusiasm from fans. But even so, some players, you know, called out the fans for not showing up. We definitely saw some, you know, empty purple seats last year. What are you hearing from fans now? How enthusiastic are they about the changes in the team and the upcoming season?
I think they're enthusiastic as far as the winning will take them, just like any fan base. I mean, going back to the Redskins, you go to a game at FedEx Field last season, and there are more Eagles fans than Redskins fans. That's because the Redskins haven't been a winning program. Ravens have been for the most part. Obviously, last year was their first playoff appearance in a few years, but for the most part, they've kept their head above water. And I think there is a certain attachment, a certain fondness for Joe Flacco, and I think certain segments of the fan base are probably coming to grips that Joe Cool is no longer a Baltimore. Now it's a guy who is a little different or a lot different from the traditional quarterbacks that you see in the NFL. But again, I mean, if the Ravens win, you'll see fans fill the stadium. If they lose, you know, who knows? I mean, one of the, you know, great amenities of modern life is that you don't have to go to the stadium to have a great time watching an NFL game. You can, you know, put your feet back, watch a great game on a 16-inch screen and feel like $50 richer because you won't have paid for parking passes or a ticket or anything like that. So it really is just that push and pull between what you feel you can get out of going to a Ravens game and, you know, embracing the atmosphere and, you know, cheering with 70,000 other fans versus, you know, I'll just hang out at home and hopefully they get the win.
Mm-hmm. Although when you're at home, you know, you don't get like frozen in November or sweated out in September.
That's true.
It certainly has its advantages.
Climate control.
cheaper beer as well. another thing affecting fans, really looking league-wide, there have been a lot of controversies, you know, concussions, injuries, CTE. We've had a lot of domestic violence and criminal problems from players. And then on top of that, the kneeling for the national anthem and the controversies over that. Are those sorts of things driving people away? And at the same time, will winning overcome those kinds of things that maybe have turned people away from the league?
It's a tough question. I think, as with anything, it's kind of a cumulative effect. And it's a very personal question, because if your politics don't align with what you see as the Ravens endorsing or condoning, and, you know, it reaches a certain breaking point, then obviously you're going to abandon your support of the team. I think a lot of people had a problem with someone as revered as Ray Lewis, you know, kneeling for the national anthem in London a couple of years ago. I mean, that petition that went online right after he kneeled to have that statue removed reached like 50, 60, 70,000 signatures,
wow,
which is pretty incredible for a guy as revered as Ray Lewis.
Sure, he's beloved in this town.
Absolutely. So I think the caution for most NFL teams isn't so much CTE, which is unfortunate because obviously we're dealing with people's brains here. It is just the social justice and the possibility of, you know, bringing in guys who are problematic off the field. That's one thing that in the wake of the Ray Lewis scandal, the Ravens have obviously been very hesitant to avoid. They don't want to bring anyone who can bring the kind of shame on the organization that Tyreek Hill has, for instance, in Kansas City with all the stuff that he's been going on with his partner and his kid and the allegations of child abuse and all the nasty recordings there. So, I think a lot of fans have tunnel vision. You're willing to accept what you want to. If a team's good, you're willing to overlook the bad. And I think it really just comes down to what you're willing to tolerate. And for each person, that's going to be their own calculus to decide on.
And with some of these social justice issues and the player protests, are you expecting any new or different guidance or ways of handling this from the NFL and from the teams?
I don't think so. I think it could be a situation where the president or politician says something inflammatory that then gets the Ravens riled up. But it's interesting when you compare the reaction in a place like the NFL to a place like the NBA, where the players have a lot more freedom and maybe a lot more confidence to speak up, because again, there are only like 13 players on an NBA team compared to the NFL, where it's a 53-man roster, and there's a lot less individualism, I guess you would say. So I think I don't expect players to be especially proactive, I guess, in taking a stand, unless there is something that really gets them hot and bothered. But I think, you know, just like any player, they can certainly be reactive. And if something does get them riled up and that they feel passionate about, and I think they know the politics of Maryland, obviously there's going to be a red portion of any fan base and a blue portion of any fan base. But I think you'll probably see a relatively muted side of things from a social justice perspective.
I know, Jonas, if folks want to follow your reporting, what's the best way to find you in the paper and on Twitter?
On Twitter, at Jonas_Schaefer, Schaffer, and just read us on the Sun.
All right. And thank you so much for joining us and sharing your expertise about the Ravens.
Thanks for having me.
And that wraps up this week's Newsroom Edition. Thank you for joining us. For more audio from the Baltimore Sun, head on over to baltimoresun.com/roughlyspeaking or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, as we always say, while times change, the need for quality journalism doesn't. So please consider subscribing to the Baltimore Sun at baltimoresun.com/subscribe. For producers Hallie Miller and Steve Early, thank you again, and we'll see you back here next week.